It was mid-afternoon when Edward, Gannon, and Jasper reached the Davenport home. Willie was out in front talking with a few of the ranch hands, and upon seeing the riders, the young man went to the door of the home and called in.
Pa, the sheriff's coming, and that new marshal.
The hands continued to mill about as the three reined in their horses and dismounted.
Afternoon, Sheriff. Marshal. Hello, Jasper.
Afternoon, Willie.
Good afternoon.
Hey there, Willie.
Your father here, Willie. We'd like to talk to him.
Just called out for him when y'all rode up.
Jake, I thought we'd see you in town. What's going on?
Can we talk to you inside?
Why, sure. Come on in. Willie, tell your mama to bring a pitcher and some glasses. What is it you want to talk about, Jake?
Well, officially, the marshal here should be doing the asking.
Willie entered the room with his mother, Matilda. Matilda Davenport had been a woman of strong facial features and bright eyes. The past few days had put the family future in severe doubt, and now caused those eyes to be fretful and her features bent with concern.
William?
Thank you, Mother. You know Sheriff and Jasper, and this here is Marshal Spencer, new to the territory.
State, you mean?
Yes, of course. Still getting used to saying that.
I'm sorry, this tea is all I could whip up. I wish I had known you'd be coming. I could make some biscuits right quick.
Oh, no thank you, Mrs. Davenport. You needn't go to any trouble.
Well then, I'll leave you to it.
I'm sorry. She is so upset at the loss of the herd. We have worked for years to be where we are. She is all out over having to lose so much. Now, Marshal, what do you need to be asking of me?
Mr. Davenport, we believe that the reservoir at the base of,
Prospect Mountain.
Yeah, thank you, Jasper. The reservoir at the base of Prospect Mountain was tainted with what Doc Miller thinks was a sulfide of some kind. And we think your herd drank from that reservoir, and that's what killed them.
You're saying someone poisoned the reservoir?
Well, there hasn't been anything else that could have made that much sulfide in the reservoir unless it was put there on purpose.
Just to kill my herd?
We think so, Bill. Now, you had said that a man came out to talk to you about selling your land, right?
Edmund Ryerson. I done told you that the day we found the herd.
Did he tell you why he wanted to buy it? Was he interested in cattle, mining, or anything else?
Come to think of it, no. He never mentioned why. Both times, he just said that he was willing to make us a handsome offer.
How long ago was the first time?
About 6 months ago. And then again, about 3 months later.
Yeah, it was 6 months ago because we had a turnover of ranch hands.
You hired new ranch hands?
Yeah. We lost a couple of good boys in a rock slide at the base of Prospect while wrangling for a head count. And not long after, we took in Tom Felton and Eldon Brewer.
Is Brewer still here?
No, he left yesterday. He headed north to Wyoming. He's got an uncle up that way. His uncle and I are old friends. Sad to see him go, but the minute the herd was gone, he figured he'd better move on before I'd have to let him go. Smart, that young man.
But Felton is still here.
Well, sure. He's my ranch boss. He's a strong hand and was quick to take to it. And all the fellas seemed to like him. Once Chet Davis got his legs shot up.
Wait, when did that happen?
A few months back. A few hands were bringing back some provisions from Denver that we couldn't get in Leadville, and some Indians tried to bushwhack him. They didn't succeed, but Chet's leg was hurt pretty bad, so I promoted Felton to ranch boss, and things were going pretty good. Felton blames himself for the loss, and he's been in a foul mood of late, but it's not his fault.
Edward and Gannon shared a flitting glance.
Is Felton around? I'd like to talk to him about the searches they made for the herd. If maybe he saw anything uncommon in the days leading up to...
I'm sorry, Mr. Davenport. It's been a long ride out here. I need to use your outhouse.
Marshal, I think you...
You should go ahead and talk to Felton. I'll be along. Willie, could you direct me?
Sure thing, Marshal. You just follow this hall, and then the door on the right takes you out back.
Thanks, Willie.
Willie, why don't you call in Felton? He should be in the bunkhouse.
I hate to rush, but let's all just head over there. We need to be getting back to town.
All right, let's all go.
Thanks for the tea, Mrs. Davenport.
As they stepped out onto the porch, a few ranch hands along with Felton were standing outside the bunkhouse smoking.
Tom, come here a minute. Sheriff needs a word with you.
Felton lifted his head toward the house. Gannon gently rested his right hand on the grip of his Smith & Wesson Schofield that Niels Jepson had etched for him after the fateful trip to save Ada. Something in Felton tensed, And in a flash, he dropped his hand-rolled cigarette and drew his revolver and fired off three quick shots, causing the ranch hands around him to jump back in confusion and the men on the porch to dive for cover. Bill and Willie Davenport dove for cover to the sides of the door and behind the rails of the porch. Gannon dove headfirst for the dirt, leaping two front porch steps while Jasper fell backward into the house. As soon as his barrage ended, Felton turned and ran for the corral outside, where a couple of saddled horses were waiting. He'd almost reached the horses when Edward Spencer came around the far side of the horses to launch himself into Felton. The two men landed in a heavy heap in the space between the corral and the house, causing Felton to drop his gun. Edward quickly got to a crouch and grabbed Felton by his shirt and pulled him into a half-seated position.
Mr. Felton, I was hoping to ask you a few questions.
Edward then got to his feet and pulled his Colt Peacemaker from his holster.
Sheriff, you fellas all right?
Yeah, you?
Fine. Now, Mr. Felton, what's the rush?
About 200 yards from the Davenport house, in a grove of trees atop a hill, four men stood with horses close by. One of the men, Remy Kasich, lowered his binoculars.
They got Felton. This dang fool just kept a cool head like I told him he wouldn't be caught.
They shoot him?
Nah, he fired off a few rounds, but that new marshal roughed him up some.
Earl Barnes, a tall, whipcord lean man with a scar just under his left eye, stood with Sam Nunn, a shorter man with a stocky build and a thick mustache that bent down around his mouth, giving him the look of a man with a perpetual frown.
What do we tell the others? They need to know.
We ain't supposed to tell them anything don't involve them directly. And so far, this don't.
Then what the hell we gonna do, Remy?
Remy Kasich turned to the other three as a dark smile crawled across his lips.
What do you think? We gonna kill them.
Tom Felton woke to find his hands and feet bound, seated against the post outside the ranch hand bunkhouse opposite the Davenport home. In front of him stood Bill and Willie Davenport, Marshal Spencer, Sheriff Gannon, Jasper Lincolns, and a few other of the ranch hands. Although the Davenport faces were fixed with a mix of anger and disappointment, it was the ranch hand faces that were set with astonishment.
Felton, you're going to have to answer some questions for us. And if you do right by us, I'll put in a good word for you with Judge Barrows.
Well, that is a mite nice of you, Sheriff. But we both know that ain't going to do much. That was pretty sharp of you, Marshal. I didn't even see you coming.
You're going to answer some questions, goddammit. You killed my herd, and I want to know why. Or by God, I'll beat you so bad you wish you died.
Felton cocked his head right at the landowner and gave a casual smile.
Old man, I ain't afraid of you. There ain't nothing you can do to me that will make me tell you a damn thing. If you want to kill me, you best get to it.
You son of a bitch! You've ruined this family! Who helped you?
Before anyone could get to him, Willie charged and began stomping and kicking Felton.
All right.
Hold on there, Willie.
That's enough.
Sheriff Gannon turned his head to the stunned ranch hands.
You boys, take Willie on out of here.
Damn you, Felton! You bastard!
Felton had curled onto his side and lifted his head to watch Willie be pulled away by two ranch hands.
That boy has some fight in him. Couldn't herd cattle, but can kick like a mule.
Edward Spencer stepped forward and crouched by Felton.
You need to talk, Felton.
Marshal, I ain't afraid of you. Any of you. So go ahead and let Davenport kill me.
Oh, I gathered you're not afraid of us from the moment you fired on the sheriff here. But that's the second time you suggested we kill you right here and now. So I'm guessing you are afraid of whoever it is you're working with. Or for. Am I right?
Felton's eyes flashed pure panic, and he shifted himself back to a seated position.
I thought so. And I have a feeling that if we don't kill you, they'll think you're being kept alive because you've told us something. And I'm betting they'll come looking for you
and nothing Mr. Davenport here wants to do to you would ever compare to what your employer would have in mind. Right?
Felton looked to Sheriff Gannon and Davenport, and then over his shoulders past the low rail of the fence, and then scanned the horizon.
No. No, you gotta kill me. You don't understand.
Then maybe you should tell us who hired you to kill Davenport's herd.
Listen, I got a sister in Tennessee.
Tell us who hired you.
I can't tell you anything. If I talk, they'll kill her.
How much are they paying you?
It's not just about the money.
What was it then?
Kill me!
I suppose we'll have to oblige.
Oh, thank what? God.
Right after, you're put on trial for causing the death of Davenport's herd and taking the life of Miss Mary Donnelly. Which should take a while, and plenty of attention to come your way. And by then, no one will know for sure if you told us anything or not.
No!
Sheriff, we should get this prisoner back to town as soon as possible, and let Judge Barrows know we'll be needing to set up a trial.
You can't!
Oh, yes. Yes, we can.
Tom Felton was set upon his horse with his hands tied behind him, as Sheriff Gannon, Marshal Spencer, and Jasper Lincolns escorted him back to town. Jasper rode out front, as Gannon followed, leading Felton's horse while Edward brought up the rear.
You know, Felton, we could work out a deal.
Gannon threw a quick glance over his shoulder, trying to judge the intentions of the young marshal. The marshal gave an up nod to the elder lawman.
We aren't back to town yet, and this is my jurisdiction. If you told us more about who employed you and why, I would consider letting you go. And you could get a day's jump on whoever might try to harm your sister.
You listen here, Marshal. This man is a prisoner and must be held to account for his crimes. And one of those is the death of a little girl.
Know your place, Sheriff. I'm saying if he told us why he poisoned that reservoir and caused the death of that poor little girl, he'd be helping us and we could release him to prevent the death of his own kin.
We don't even know if that's even true. He could be making all that up just to solicit some sympathy. But there was no sympathy for Davenport's livelihood or that little girl. He should be accused of murder.
Damn it, I didn't even taint the reservoir. It was the others. And how was I to know the rain would wash it all downstream where that little girl was swimming?
Edward gigged his horse up to be alongside Felton.
What others?
Damn it, you have to let me go.
Tell me what others and why you had to do this.
We weren't told everything. Just what we needed to know. I was to get hired as a ranch hand. And when Davenport refused the second offer, we had to fix it so I became ranch boss.
So you could help with killing the herd?
No! So I could stall while they got it done and then lead the Davenports to it on the right day. But the rain fouled everything up and made it take longer.
Sheriff?
What others?
Oh, hell.
I will cut you loose if you tell me the names of the others.
The damn Kasich brothers, Sam Nunn and Earl Barnes. They did the herd.
Were there more?
Suddenly the increasing tension in Felton's face turned to an odd sadness. He looked at Gannon and then to Edward again.
Yes. There were...
Felton was halted mid-sentence by a rifle report from a grove of trees ahead, and a bullet that struck Felton in his left cheek and blew the right back half of his head off in a crimson cloud. His body stayed upright for just a second before it slumped off the horse, falling to the ground as a barrage of gunfire erupted. Jasper dove from his mule, scurried to a line of sage to his left as the mule darted ahead on the trail. While Gannon quickly jigged his horse to the sage on the left, Edward sat stunned for a second as a few bullets whizzed by before he heard the sheriff.
Marshal, get cover!
Edward suddenly dove off his horse and stumbled, quickly scampering to the sage. Gannon and Edward began shooting back at the grove ahead, where the report had come.
I shouldn't have stopped us!
Wouldn't have made much difference. They were waiting for us regardless.
Movement to the left suggested they were being surrounded, till Jasper crawled into view and then hurried over to Gannon and Edward.
Did either of you hear me? There seems something funny ahead.
How far up?
They're just at that grove of trees in the bend in the trail.
You saw them?
Well, the tops of that grove has died out or something, so I saw shadows moving out from the shady parts. I thought it was Indians.
Gannon turned to Edward.
Did you grab your rifle?
No.
All right. Well, I say we fire a bunch of rounds into those trees. Ready? Now!
As Edward and Jasper fired upon the grove of trees, Gannon stood to get a better look at the upper section of the grove and then crouched back down.
All right. We need to do this quick before they get around us. I'm going to fire at the upper branches of those trees and try to flush them out. Marshall, you watch to the right of the grove, and Jasper, you look to the left. You shoot anything that moves. Ready?
Yeah,
but I sure could use a
drink. Now!
Gannon arched up to the top of the sage and fired near the top third of the line of trees, splitting a few branches and causing them to fall.
Ah! Damn it!
Look out!
Be ready.
As Gannon continued to fire, more dead branches broke free and fell among the stand of trees. After some muffled exchanges, Edward spotted movement to the right of where the ambush had come. And let a few shots pepper the area.
Damn it, let's go!
I got one, I think!
After a couple of minutes, the sound of horses riding off into the distance could be heard. And after a minute or two more, Jasper broke the silence.
You think they're still there?
Don't know, but I doubt it.
Gannon stepped out of the sagebrush and crossed into the trail.
Jasper, you see anything?
Edward then stepped out of the section of sagebrush, shaking out his shells and began reloading his weapon.
Well, I wounded one of them, that's for sure.
Some blood on the ground and a few shells, but nothing else.
Should have guessed they'd have been close. Probably been shadowing us since we left Davenport's place.
Jasper came up the trail, scanning the surrounding area for possible signs of more trouble.
So who was that?
The Kasich brothers, Sam Nunn and Earl Barnes, I suspect. Marshal?
I'd say so, too.
Gannon then turned back to see Felton's body, lying twisted and motionless, half on, half off the trail.
We need to get to our horses and try and track them.
No, we should head back to town.
What? We have to catch them before they get away.
We already know they're good at hiding their tracks, and we have no idea where around here they might have a camp. Not to mention, we aren't equipped to track them at night. We have to do something about this body. Besides, they ain't leaving the area. They must not have been paid yet.
How do you figure that, Sheriff?
I'd say the Kasichs and the rest aren't the kind to hang around once they get their money. No, there must be something else they have to do.
What's that? You think there's something else?
Don't know, but they accomplished only some of what they set out to do.
What's that?
To keep us from talking to Felton. Permanently.
Once they had sent Jasper to drop off Felton's body over to the Leadville coffin maker, Emery Peterson, Gannon and Edward entered the sheriff's office to find Millie Gannon waiting for them.
Jacob, I was wondering when you'd... What happened?
Now, Millie...
Don't you now Millie me. I know that look on your face. What happened?
The ranch hand over Davenport's is dead. Tom Felton. Apparently he was mixed up in the whole killing of the herd business, and we were trying to get him to tell us more about them than was in on it. But we were ambushed on our way back to town. They shot Felton, and we traded some rounds, but they took off. Marshall here nicked one of them, though.
Well, who was it?
We don't know for sure, but the Kasich brothers and a couple that run with them are who we think it is. They've been in town now and again. We're going to have to go back out for them come the morning.
Have you eaten?
Now, Millie, don't fuss.
Actually, that would be great, Millie. I am quite hungry.
You two sit right down there and I'll fix up something for you.
We need to talk, privately.
About what?
Let's sit down. You realize there's someone else involved in all this. Someone close.
Apart from this Ryerson fellow from Denver, yes.
Any thoughts as to who?
Nothing definite. What is it?
I think I figured out why the herd was killed off. It was not just to make sure Davenport had to sell the land, but to make sure no one from around here would want it.
Edward produced a piece of paper from his pocket, unfolded it, and set it on the table.
Look, here's the main trail from Denver that comes right into town.
Right.
Right alongside Davenport's land. But see this coffee spill? It's almost a direct line from Denver to Leadville.
But we already have a trail. What good would a more direct route be?
Think size and down the line a bit. Look, you said this town is expanding. What if the next thing they found around here was gold? This town would expand even faster than it already has, and a railroad line would be key to that. A line could come straight through Davenport's property, property that would soon be for sale and very cheap. The price for it is bound to plummet once more people know about the arrangement of the dead herd. But that land would actually be worth a hell of a lot more, and whoever bought it from Davenport could resell it at a much higher price. Hell, if a railroad company was behind all this, they would have control over the speed of commerce from everything to goods and services to the rush of people coming out here hoping to strike it rich. A rail line into Leadville could then move west and meet up with a line to Grand Junction northwest of here or south to Santa Fe.
That's a lot of work for one rail line.
That one line would be connected to almost everything. It would be worth sending a small band of criminals to poison a reservoir, kill a whole herd and set up some religious spectacle to drive people away and drive down the price of the land. It would be worth a fortune. Certainly worth killing over.
Gannon got up, turning away from the table, and crossed the room in thought. Then he turned back to Edward.
We gotta keep Bill Davenport from selling that land.
Well, he said he'd owe the bank, and the bank would take the land. You think someone at the bank could be involved?
Doubtful. Even if there was, there's no way they could steer the sale to the interested party without being exposed.
All right, here's some... What are you two on about?
Just trying to figure out something.
Millie crossed and began setting the table for the two lawmen to eat.
Well, what is it?
Millie, we need to stop someone from doing something.
Well, if you two can't figure it out, give me a try.
Now, Millie...
All right. You want to find out who's trying to buy something. How would you do it?
Really? You two must be tired and slow and about as smart as a barrel of hammer handles, because that's easy.
Well, then how?
You convince the seller to have an auction and then offer a better price.
Both men stared at Millie dumbfounded as she turned to go.
That way, someone would have to show up to outbid you. Now eat up, you silly fools.
As Sheriff Gannon stood at the door of the jail office, he watched the morning traffic of Leadville push past. Watching the town folk make their way through town, he thought about Edward's theory about the growth of Leadville and how prosperous individual merchants would likely be if they were ambitious enough to drive fellow merchants out of business or a larger merchant came in to crush the competition. Millie came in from the back of the jail, and from behind her came the smell of biscuits and bread that wafted forward, making Gannon forget he'd just eaten.
Jacob, did you make the coffee on this stove? I told you to leave me to do that.
I didn't want to wait.
Sheriff, you do not make good coffee.
Well, tastes fine to me.
After drinking the coffee you make, I'm surprised you can taste anything.
Gannon continued to watch people going by, with an occasional nod of town folk seeing him standing in the doorway.
Morning, Sheriff.
Morning.
Sheriff Gannon.
Good morning, Sheriff.
Good morning, ma'am. Sir.
Jacob, I thought you were going to look for those ambushers.
I'm waiting on the marshal. It's his jurisdiction out there, so I can't go without him. He said he had to check on something, but he didn't say what.
Well, I wish you'd get out there and catch him so I can have you back in town safe. And you can stand in that doorway like a politician or a preacher all you like.
Gannon continued to watch people going about their business when he suddenly turned around.
What did you just say?
I said I wish you'd hurry and...
No, about me standing in the doorway.
You can stand in that doorway like a politician or a preacher all you like. You know, overly friendly. A politician wants more votes, and a preacher wants more people when they pass the plate.
Gannon turned again to the bustling commerce of Leadville and then made a beeline for his hat hanging on a hook by the door.
Millie, sometimes I wish I were as smart as you.
Me too. If I knew why...
Gannon made his way quickly down the boardwalk and crossed the street, headed for May's general store.
Howdy, Sheriff.
A thought had been nagging at Sheriff Gannon ever since Felton was murdered. If the Kasich brothers Sam Nunn and Earl Barnes were staying somewhere outside of town, and now one of them would need medical attention, who would give it to them? A way to find that out without actually asking that question was currently what Gannon was off to discover. Sheriff Gannon entered May's General Store, a recent addition to Leadville, with the promise that founder David May might be able to help track down an accomplice living in town. Looking around, Gannon saw Tarly Gaines, the bespectacled main clerk, placing boxes on a shelf.
Tarly, I need to talk to you.
Well, just a minute, Sheriff.
No, now. Come here.
Now, Sheriff, what is this all about? I have customers.
Listen, you sell all sorts of panning and camp gear, right?
Yes, but if you need to...
What I need is information. Has there been any strange purchases or large quantities of gear in the past month that you can remember?
Sheriff, what is this all about?
Please, I need you to check.
All right. I'm very sorry, ladies. I will be with you in just a moment. Now, let's see here.
Tarly scanned the pages, running his fingers down one particular column, then flipping back a page, then another, each time running his finger down the book.
Not really. No. Everything here is pretty much the usual volume of turnover of materials and products. Perhaps if there was something specific.
How about who bought what?
I don't see how that would be any of your business.
Tarly, damn it, just check and see if there was anyone who bought stuff they might not normally buy.
The clerk squinted over his oval spectacles at the sheriff, but then looked back down to the current page, to a different column, and ran down a finger. It was only a few entries before a quizzical look crossed his face.
Wow, that is odd.
What is it?
Tarly looked up and, with a look of odd bemusement, turned the ledger toward the sheriff.
Well, this.
Unlike most establishments in Leadville, the Eagle Saloon always seemed to be open. Franklin Beadle's general rule was if someone was thirsty, they were gonna drink. And if you were closed, they'd just drink someplace else. There was no sense of being closed if one could avoid it. Morning sunlight danced in and out as Edward pushed through the batwing doors and stepped into the Eagle Saloon, eyes scanning the main room. A few men sat at tables along the far wall from the bar. In the center, Gerald Wayne, the Eagle's piano player, was sweeping a small pile of dust and dirt as Franklin was behind the bar making notations in a ledger. Upon seeing the young marshal, Franklin raised a hand.
No, just no. We are not open for whatever you plan on having or doing.
Edward canted his head at the men at the table.
What about them? They seem to think you're open.
Marshal, I don't want any more trouble.
Neither do I. I just need to speak with that dark-haired woman I saw here the other night. Miss Tate?
Lenora?
Right, Lenora Tate. She around?
Yeah, she's right over there.
Franklin pointed to a small recess past the bar, where a small window box seat sat hidden from the view of the door. Lenora Tate looked up and had a slightly worried expression that instantly widened into a practiced smile.
Well, hello, Marshal. Nice of you to come calling.
Thank you, Franklin. Miss Tate.
I did not think I would be the interest of the infamous new federal marshal.
I'd like to talk to you.
Talk? Marshal, I think you may have been misled about the nature of my profession.
No, I don't believe I have been. But it is your business I wish to ask you about.
Now, Marshal, you know it would be bad business for a woman of my profession to ever disclose information from one client to another.
I guess that would be the case. But I'm not your client, Miss Tate.
Oh, Marshal, do you not find me attractive?
I've seen you in here on the arm of one of the Kasich brothers and hanging around their table when they were here the other evening. I need to know anything you can tell me about both brothers and the two men who consort with them, a man named Nunn and one named Barnes.
Marshal, you have a dark, forward way about you that I find almost interesting. Surely there are more things to be discovered about the two of us, given some time?
Time is something I'm rather short on just now, Miss Tate.
Oh, Lenora, please. Now, why don't you and I have a drink and talk about the two of us instead?
Miss Tate, I need information on the Kasich
Perhaps we can retire with a drink and get better acquainted.
I just said...
Not here. Franklin, the Marshal and I do not wish to be disturbed, all right?
Sure thing, Lenora.
Marshal?
After you, Miss Tate.
Marshal Spencer and Lenora Tate crossed to a stairwell, and once at the top of it, advanced down a hallway to a door adorned with a painting of a small lilac sprig. Lenora Tate strode across the room to a small vanity table and mirror, placing her fan on the table amidst a series of small colored bottles, like bits of a shattered rainbow, and then cast a glance in the mirror at the young and now slightly uncomfortable Marshal Spencer.
My dear Marshal, you have no propriety or discretion in these rather awkward situations.
Why do we need to be in here? You don't want to be seen talking to me about the Kasich brothers gang, or both?
A man such as yourself must know.
Lenora, you can stop with the charming act. You know something and you can't talk openly about it. So here we are. Now I need to know all you can tell me about the Kasich brothers and the other two.
You think you can just demand that I tell you whatever I know with no regard for what might happen to me?
I mean you no disrespect or harm, but do not cloud our exchange by acting at who we are and what we do. I am a lawman, and you are a whore.
Lenora's eyes blazed with fury, and she reached out to slap Edward, only to have him catch her arm and not let go.
Let go of my arm!
from?
Assaulting a federal marshal is a crime. Did you know that? I can have you locked up and then put in front of a federal judge. Although, since one has yet to be appointed, the wheels of justice can move so slowly at times. It could be some time while you rot in a cell.
Let go, you son of a bitch!
Edward released his grip, and Lenora took a step back, but he held her firm with a look.
You might want to talk all bedroom and have the guts to try to hit me, but you know what I see? I see a hard scrabble town and a woman who doesn't have a lot of choices. Out here, young girls become mothers, maids, or whores. And sometimes there aren't that many differences between them.
You don't know the first thing about my life and the choices I've had to make, so you can just walk the hell back on out of here.
You're right. I don't have one notion of what it is to be in your place, and I never will. I might understand it, but I'll never know it.
What do you want from me?
I need information.
I can't tell you nothing. I just can't.
And I can't make you. But I'm sure you heard about that little settler girl who fell ill. She doesn't have any choices to make now. She's dead. And right now I need to find the men who are responsible for her death. And I need you to choose to help me.
Why are you here?
I just told
you— No, why are you here in Leadville? Most of the town knows you lost your wife, and a good number have seen you get drunk. But why did you come all the way out here?
Because maybe I didn't have any more choices. It was either come out here or probably just drink myself to death back east. I guess at least here I'd still be a lawman.
Well, a man without choices. Ain't that something?
Look, I'm sorry if I hurt you.
It's all right. I've had worse.
I'm sure you have. I need to go. Sorry to have bothered you.
Edward reached into his vest pocket, produced a few bills, and offered them to Lenora.
What is that for?
For you.
I don't need your charity, Marshal.
No, that's not... take it. For your time. For the danger speaking to me may cause you. Anyone sees me leave this room, you can say I paid. If I didn't pay, someone might assume we just talked, and you told me something you shouldn't have.
Edward placed the bills on top of a dresser along the wall.
I'll just leave it here.
Wait! Please. I'll tell you what I know about the Kasichs, but I need something from you.
What?
We're kind of kindred spirits, you and I. I want you to kiss me.
I don't understand.
As you see me, as I am, I want you to kiss me.
Marshall Spencer stared. Suddenly the woman before him was no longer the beautiful prostitute he'd seen. She had changed. Her eyes were no longer shining with pleasure and charm, but the soft eyes of a young doe, of a girl. Her request hung in the air, and just as suddenly, the eyes changed once again to a flash of anguish, of a haunted, lonely despair.
Oh, hell, forget it, Marshall. Get out. Marshall, I told you—
Edward. My name's Edward.
Edward crossed the room and took Lenora's left hand with his right. He brought it up chest level and closed his left hand over it.
Miss Lenora.
The young marshal then drew Lenora close as he leaned his head toward hers. Lenora's tear-filled eyes closed, and tears cascaded down her face as she leaned in toward Edward. Lenora leaned away from the kiss, her eyes opening with a sense of sad wonderment.
God, you're so lonely.
Yeah. But so are you, Lenora.
I'll tell you what I can.
After.
Lenora wrapped her arms around Edward's neck. They stood there for a moment, lost in the kiss. And then, together, started to move as one in what seemed like a slow, delicate waltz toward the bed, with equal parts caressing and undressing each other. Marshall Spencer and Lenora Tate hailed one another, the marshal's eyes looking down and gently caressing Lenora's head as she stared with an odd mix of sadness and contentment out the window. Edward stopped caressing her head and let his hand come to rest as he leaned his head close, almost pressing his lips into her hair.
I have to go.
Edward broke their embrace, rose, and began to get dressed. Lenora sat up in the bed and brought her knees up with the sheets, only her head exposed.
Don't get too deep into this, Marshall. Just don't.
About an hour later into the morning, Edward rode up to the jail on the Appaloosa with the shiny new Winchester 1846 in the saddle boot. As soon as Edward dismounted and tied the horse to the post, the sheriff came out walking quickly.
Are you ready? I think I know where the Kasich brothers and them other two might be.
Where?
There's a ridge and a small clearing just to the southwest of Prospect Mountain. They're supposed to have a small camp there.
How'd you find that out?
Lenora at the Eagle. One of the Kasich brothers wanted her to go out there instead of taking a room at the saloon.
Why?
Well, privacy, I suppose. More convenience for all four of them to acquire her services. She declined, though she says they would have willingly paid more.
They didn't haggle? Which means those four trail riders either had more money than their appearance led on, or...
Someone else is footing their bill.
Whoever hired them, yeah.
Sheriff, look there. Is that Davenport and some of his men?
Looks to be. He's probably here to settle up at the bank. We need to talk him out of that. Maybe we can get him and his men to help us catch up with the Kasichs and the other two. We should get Jasper. He's in town at the livery.
Okay, I need to grab a few things at the general store, and then I'll get Jasper. I'll meet you over at the bank.
Good. Oh, and I think I know how they've been able to stay around so long without having to come into town for supplies.
The main bank in Leadville was run by the wife of the owner of the largest mining operation in the area. Horace Tabor's wife, Augusta, was a fair but fierce woman to be reckoned with. Although her husband's business lay in the minerals to be mined about the area, Augusta knew that without a fair banking system, no amount of business would thrive in Leadville. As long as people were coming into Leadville to do business, they would need a bank. And she knew that the best way to make money in a boomtown was in banking. When Sheriff Gannon entered the banking office, he saw Bill Davenport speaking with Miller Jackson, the bank manager. He crossed the room to halt the conversation.
Now, the choice is yours to sell the land or have the ownership revert to the bank, but we will have to do an appraisal first.
It's the same land as when I bought it.
Now, Mr. Davenport, we both know the circumstances have laid and the land's potential sale value will most certainly have been diminished.
Diminished? What in blazes are you talking about? I had nothing to do with what happened out there, and it was no act of God or the devil or whatever.
Yes, that may well be, but public perception does count for something in this market. And also there's the fact of the small body of water that was tainted and left the water unsuitable for man or animal.
You're trying to tell me I'm still going to owe you for the same land I bought, even if the price were to go down?
Bill, just a minute. Pardon me, but I think I can help you with this.
Jake, what are you on about? I got enough problems with appraisal nonsense than to hear more bad news from you.
Bill, if you just give me a few minutes, I think we can work a few things out. Mr. Jackson, is there somewhere the Davenports and I can talk privately for a few minutes?
Well, sure, Sheriff. I guess you all could use my office. Right this way, gentlemen.
As Marshall Spencer left May's general store, a voice called to him.
Marshall!
Edward turned and saw Griffin jogging up toward him.
I was over at the jail, but Jasper said you all were heading out of town, and I wanted to catch you.
Griffin, glad you're back. You're right. We're headed out to look for those who we think are responsible for the loss of Davenport's herd.
You want to know what I found out in Denver?
Yeah, but give me the short vision while we walk. Actually, you should come with us. We could use another man.
Oh, sure, I guess. I mean, are we going to get shot at?
That is a distinct possibility.
I ain't never been shot at, Marshall. I mean, apart from Betty Deegan's pa losing some buckshot for trying to see his daughter.
Well, if it make you feel any better, I'll deputize you.
What, and be a deputy U.S. Marshal?
Well, a temporarily deputized one anyway. Unless you want to stop panning.
What the hell? I ain't made anything panning in the last month. Might as well.
Yeah. We'll discuss the pay later.
Back in the bank manager's office, Gannon set about explaining his plan.
Now, Bill, the marshal and I think there's a way we can find out who might be behind what happened to your herd and be trying to get your land.
Look, Jake, I appreciate all you've done so far, but the immediate problem is the money I owe on the land to the bank. Without a herd, I have nothing to sell in the near term to pay back the bank.
I understand that, but we also need to find out who's doing this. That little settler girl died because of it. I know you lost your herd, but a mother lost a child.
Davenport stared at the floor and then glanced at his son, Willie.
All right, Jake, let's hear it.
If I have this right, either the bank could auction off the land to get their money, or you could sell it and use that money to pay the bank.
Yeah, those are two options.
Well, we know that someone will come to either buy the land from you or at least show up to bid on it were it to go to a bank auction. Now, there are legal provisions to require buyers and bidders to disclose who they're acting for, if not on behalf of themselves.
Yeah, but we won't know if anyone acting as an agent for a third party even knows who that third party is.
Actually, we will. The great thing about Colorado becoming a state is that certain federal laws now apply, which did not when it was a territory.
But it could be a company behind another company.
The office door opened, and Marshall Spencer joined the meeting.
Morning, Mr. Davenport. Willie, sorry for being late. I had to speak with the manager about a personal issue. Sheriff, Griffin is off to talk to Eamon Donnelly, and if all goes well, we'll be set.
Sheriff, what are we supposed to gain here?
Have you brought up Credit Mobilier yet?
No. I was about to. You want to explain it?
Marshall, you can explain all the laws to me you want, but none of this is going to change the fact that I'm going to lose the land.
Mr. Davenport, I have no intention of letting that happen. We just need there to be an auction so we can find out more about who is trying to acquire your land.
Well, I don't understand. Is a property going to go to auction or not?
Well, Mr. Davenport, yes and no.
A few hours after Sheriff Gannon and Marshal Spencer had explained their idea of how to ensnare the would-be purchaser of Davenport's land, they traveled with Bill and Willie Davenport, two of Davenport's ranch hands, Eamon Donnelly and two of his sons, to the location of the Kasich's camp east of town. They had gotten just about 100 yards shy of the camp when they all dismounted and set about attempting to encircle the camp, which had a ridge to the east. The Davenport contingent made their way to cut off escape to the southwest, while the Donnellys took to the northwest. Sheriff Gannon had argued about bringing Griffin along. The young man had never been in a shootout, let alone part of a posse. But since Edward deputized Griffin, they were outside of the sheriff's jurisdiction. Gannon could dissent, yet he knew they needed the numbers. As it stood, it was 9 against 4, but those four were hardened killers, and the bulk of the posse were farmers and ranchers. The odds were barely even. Fearing that the Kasich gang would somehow be informed the posse was coming, they had left wordlessly from town and only met up with the Donnellys a few miles from town off the main trail. Griffin had explained that the men who had had a hand in Mary Donnelly's death had been located, and it had been a near fight for Eamon to have to choose which two family members to come with him. As Sheriff Gannon moved through the sagebrush and scrub trees, he looked back to Edward and gave a nod at Griffin, who'd begun to sweat profusely since dismounting his horse some yards back.
Griffin, you all right?
Yeah, Marshal. I'm fine. Just a bit hot is all.
Just keep your wits about you and keep your eyes front. We don't want to kill these men. We need them alive. Just relax.
Marshal Spencer looked back to Gannon, whose displeasure at bringing the young Griffin along could easily be seen in the sheriff's scowl.
Griffin, you just hang back and make sure none of the gang gets past us. And don't get jumpy and shoot either of us in the back.
Oh, okay, Sheriff.
Gannon gestured for Edward to come closer for a last talk about their plan.
Okay, so the Donnellys are north and the Davenports south. You think the Donnellys will keep cool heads?
I made sure to tell them that we need these men alive. I may have suggested that we weren't too sure Kasich and the rest weren't responsible for Mary's death, and the actual men responsible might get away if word got around a killing party was roaming about.
All right, then. Well, it's your show, Marshal. How do you want to play this?
Well, I think we should split and be about 30, 40 yards apart with Griffin in the middle about 30 yards back. If they try to split north or south, they'll be pinned by the Donnellys or the Davenports. And if they come straight at us, we can funnel them down and we'll have them.
What's to stop them from going due east over the ridge?
Nothing, except that as the Davenports mentioned, they would only have about a mile on us before they'd have to cross Davenport's land in order to make a break by way of Denver. Then we can keep them from flanking us, and the rest of the Davenport ranch hands will have them cold.
Gannon shifted and turned to look back at Griffin. The sheriff gestured for Griffin to slip between the two lawmen and stay back about 30 yards from them as they advanced.
We better hurry up then, before Griffin stops sweating and starts finding other ways to shed water.
All right. Both families should be in place by now. Let's go. You know, we might just find an empty camp.
Yeah, somehow I doubt that.
It was about a half an hour later when the two lawmen and the new deputy inched their way forward and heard the sounds of an argument. Apparently not all in Kasich's camp were in agreement about something important. The path they had taken to get to the camp was somewhat of a slope north to south that flattened about 30 feet from the camp. Marshal Spencer had just gotten into a position where he could see through a thin line of trees three men arguing. Where the fourth one was unclear, but he looked to be close as four horses and two mules were accounted for. Marshal Spencer wondered if the fourth was on lookout. They hadn't seen anyone coming in, but then men of this caliber didn't tend to give themselves away. Edward lifted the Winchester that the sheriff had acquired for him and steadied his nerves. This was far from chasing criminals down the streets of Baltimore, but the reason no less important. Edward had just looked over to Sheriff Gannon to nod that he was ready when he heard a noise behind him. Edward spun and chambered around into the Winchester. He then saw Griffin sliding down the slope, coming to a stop 20 feet past the spot where he'd been.
Oh, hell.
Edward spun around again, realizing Griffin's fall had given them away.
Damn it, I told you we couldn't trust him. Someone's out there.
With the element of surprise now gone, Edward figured it was only a matter of seconds before the shooting would start. He could hear, but couldn't make out what was being said in the camp. And now that everyone was in place, there was no need to try and hide any longer.
This is United States Deputy Marshal Edward Spencer. You are surrounded. Drop your weapons!
Oh, the hell you say!